Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT. Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Hello?
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT. Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
All right, we are trying this for like the fourth time here. trying to get the show going with some strange technical problems, one thing after another, but I think we are live, and we appreciate those of you who stuck with us here for the last several minutes as we try to get things rolling. Tyler, first things first to you. Did that big show closing angle, the drama of being on the football field where the Jacksonville Jaguars typically play with the big return of the Young Bucks, who apparently were standing by watching Kenny Omega get beat up before the cameras turned on, leaping onto Santana and Ortiz, followed by the long-awaited return of Hangman Page. Did that work for you in terms of an effective way, both in terms of the visual of it and also the drama of the Elite reuniting live on Dynamite? Did that work to build up one of the big selling points for Saturday?
So I was already pretty convinced to, when this match was announced last week with the incident with, I think Bruce is the name of the bat, if I recall, in Vanguard 1. That got me pretty hyped for this match, and it's a continuation of the blood and guts match that we never got because of, everything that's going on. It didn't really do it for me. I would say it didn't hurt it by any stretch of the imagination. I'm still the same level of anticipation for this match as I was before. I just thought that the showing of the stadium on Dynamite, I can see why that would be needed to sell some pay-per-views for some fans, but just for me, I didn't need it. And it just felt a little on the nose in general. The Bucks, like you said, were kind of standing by, and they felt kind of tertiary to the whole thing. But Hangman, Adam Page, his 100-yard dash was a pretty cool effect. I said that's the one thing that I would remember from this, looking back some time from now. He looked like a big star and did some cowboy stuff. So I thought it worked for him and his character, but overall I thought it was fine, but nothing to write home about.
In a way, I mean, they wanted to give people a taste of what's to come. But it gave away a lot in terms of showing, for good or for bad, what the fight might be like on the football field. And it takes away some of the, I wonder what it's going to be like when it happens, and gave you a pretty extended version of it. And I would say that's the downside of it. The cool side would be if you believe that it effectively set up or it effectively built up anticipation with viewers wanting to see more and wanting to see a fight to the finish. I thought I'm with you. I thought there was some good and I thought there was some hokey. The fact that Inner Circle arrived at the beginning of the show and had not been seen and no one had mentioned, I don't think I remember the announcer saying, you know, where's Jericho? They got here. What are they doing to kind of build up to that moment? I guess maybe the strategy was just have you forget they were there, but then why show them at the beginning if the idea isn't to keep you tuned in? And then kind of beating up Kenny and throwing water on him and then suddenly having the Young Bucks show up. I mean, how did the Young Bucks get there? How long did they know Kenny was getting beat up? It just didn't really ring believable to me. One thing I liked was the announcers at the end saying, hey, Hangman Page, he showed up. He's fighting alongside the Elite. That's good to see, because the last time we saw him, there were some question marks. But then within seconds, he's just wandering off. And they're like, well, you know, I guess he did what he wanted to do, help his friends, but now he's looking for a happy hour. And so they kept that alive, that sense of he's there, but is he really? He's with them, but is he really with them? And I think having that question going into Saturday is a selling point for the show. And that was kind of the final note that they hit. I think it probably went a minute or two longer than it should have. I actually thought it started to run out of a little steam too. And I was kind of like, wow, they're still fighting. Okay. And it didn't feel like red hot. So yeah, I think it had had mixed results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think if anything, maybe they'll learn to not do just all 10 of the guys brawling in the middle of the field. They'll learn to, have everybody doing different things in different areas to keep it fresh, because that was not a very stunning visual to see everybody just kind of like hitting each other with a baseball bat in the middle of an end zone. So
yeah, there's something about how small they look in such a vast space that can take away some of the intensity that we normally see with a ring surrounded by fans yelling and screaming in a confined space for them to fight in. And even, you know, Edge Orton, they didn't have a confined space in the same way, but it wasn't just this big open air football field where you're going to see a lot of walk-in brawls. But like they said, pinfalls can count anywhere in the stadium. So it might end up resembling Edge Orton a little bit by the time we get there. Well, we got a lot more to talk about in tonight's show. Let's pause. Let's set the table. Introduce ourselves. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, May 20th, 2020. We are streaming live after the AEW Dynamite episode airing on TNT from Jacksonville, Florida at Daly's Place. And it was the final show as to sell people on Saturday's Double or Nothing pay-per-view. So a lot to talk about, including an Arn Anderson, Jake Roberts, historic, iconic summit. We'll talk about whether it was historic or a car wreck, as Jim Ross prefaced, it could be either or. It's just Jim Ross is just... I don't know if Tony Khan's pulling his hair out or laughing sometimes when Jim just says what's on his mind, but that was another thing on his mind. The other voice you're hearing is Tyler Sage. He is my co-host today, returning to the co-host chair. He is also the co-host of the PW Torch VIP podcast of honor, or is it Talking Honor? I flipped those around because you guys changed the name, and
yeah,
it's an ingrained.
No, it's okay. Talking was Harley and Emily before, and now they have their women's focused podcast.
Yeah.
And we're a podcast of honor, just to not steal their brand. So, yeah,
but it just confuses me to no end. They're both names are in my head, and I can't. It's like not knowing the difference between my left and right hand, and I do, but I don't. You know, I mean, I know who you guys are compared to them. You're very different, but name the show. So, Tyler Sage from the podcast of honor, PW Torch VIP exclusive, keeping up on the latest happenings in Ring of Honor. Things certainly slowed down, but you guys still doing a great job keeping the show interesting and analyzing what is going on. And so we'll talk maybe a little Ring of Honor as the show progresses here. But I want to give out the phone number and encourage anybody listening to give us a call here on our live stream. The number is 347-215-8558. That is 347-215-8558. You can also email us at WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. So we'll get to phone calls in just a moment. Tyler, what stood out to you as the best thing that they did on this episode to sell people on anteing up and buying the pay-per-view on Sunday? Was it the presence of Moxley and Brody Lee and Moxley's two promos? Was it the video package on Cody and Lance Archer with the Arn Jake segment? Was it what they did to promote the women's match? On and on. Heck, they hard sold Jungle Boy against MJF and really put a lot into that. There was also the announcement of a Sean Spears Dustin Rhodes match that got added to the lineup, and on and on. What do you think they did the best job with in terms of building up a particular match?
Yeah, and I look at it as, you know, if my anticipation for a match increased over what it was before I went into the show. So I was already very anticipating, you know, Cody and Lance Archer and the Stadium Stampede match. So I was already sold. So I guess I wasn't looking at it from that perspective. But I actually thought the MJF and Jungle Boy build, I was not super enthused for that match before this week, and did a good job building that and, you know, really making MJF seem important. And are they going to continue pushing him as a character and really making him a, you know, I don't know how many times they said that he wants to be the foundation of this company, him and Jungle Boy do, you know, that they were really pushing that hard that these two guys could be, you know, future huge stars for the company. So that angle really increased my interest in their match. And then the absolute train wreck of spots for the ladder match was something. I don't know if that helped me, but I hope all those guys get to that match fine, because it was like three in a row that were brutal. So those two things were what I did. But I thought they did a good job overall to sell all the tertiary and secondary matches. The main stuff kind of was set in stone, and we'll talk about all of those. But, you know, I thought all the other stuff, they did a good job.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go to our calls and see what our listeners have to say about the show, and we'll begin with area code 111, so blocked or international call. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Craig from Toledo.
Hey, Craig, good to hear from you. What'd you think of Dynamite tonight?
I liked it. It was a good, just solid watch all the way through. And the commentary specifically was really good. Tony Schiavone is like a giant bear hug. Like, he's like comfort food. It's just crazy every time. And I have two things. The women's division seems to be really starting to click. And after all these months when we were, like, criticizing them, like, you got to get it together. Now, like, there's different kind of dynamics in the storylines and the, you know, it's kind of nuanced in the way they interact with each other. Nyla and Britt Baker probably going to be a match eventually. Is the advancement of the women's division one of the top three things that's gone on in the last few months for you guys?
Well, I'm fearful that Britt Baker had a setback. I don't know if that was a legit injury or not, but certainly she sold it that way. Tyler, your take on that particular situation? I haven't been online to see if there was any kind of update, but it seemed Nyla Rose landed on her leg when the opponents threw Nyla onto Britt Baker in the corner, and she was immediately grabbing at her leg and didn't really participate after that, and it didn't seem to fit storyline-wise that you would want a single heel to beat your challenger with help from her partner when outnumbered. It doesn't seem like that would be a sensible plan. Tyler, your take?
Yeah, it definitely looked... it didn't work with the match for that to be sold as much as it was and have her disappear. But we'll hope for the best. But, yeah, I don't know. It looked bad. So, yeah, that was my take, that it was kind of a – it looked like an injury that took her out for tonight, and I was hopeful she'd be available Saturday. I didn't know – to me, it didn't look like a couple weeks or a couple months injury, but I could be mistaken there.
Yeah, so your take on the division on a whole, though?
I agree with Craig that they really improved the division. That was obviously the weak point going into the run on TNT that we, you know, most people could identify. I still don't think it's up to where I think anyone that has standards for women's wrestling where it should be. There's, you know, 4 to 6 women who get a lot of time, which kind of reminds me of ROH, that there's not too many women that get a lot of time and are focused as characters. And I'm very excited that there's two matches on, you know, assuming Britt's okay on this pay-per-view. That's a great sign, a great step forward. But, you know, I think they're really improving, and all these women are, you know, they're developing their characters, and they are, you know, finding their groove in the ring. So it's improving, and it looks like it's going up. So I think it could be better, and I think it will be better, and I am hopeful that it will be.
Did we get a Brandi Rhodes sighting on this episode of Dynamite?
I don't know. I don't think I saw her, now that you say
that.
No.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, so that's a rarity, you know, her not being wedged in. But also, I mean, if Britt Baker's out, time for Brandi Rhodes to step up. Now she's got a role as a fill-in. Yeah, no, I think they've definitely made progress. I mean, I do kind of – I'm sort of on the edge I'm nervous. I feel angst as the word of the match that the announcers got into. Jim Ross, for some reason, thinking the women would be especially nervous and have angst going into the match because it's the big spotlight on them. I don't know why they would have more pressure on them than the men. I didn't quite get what he was getting at there, but I feel angst when I watch them wrestle sometimes. I mean, that top rope spot on the table where Nyla's head barely tucked and cleared the table before crashing on it. In the post-match, and obviously what happened with that spot where they threw Nyla Rose on a Britt Baker, who for some reason had her legs, you know, bent and upward, where the landing, you know, could end up tweaking her knee or hurting her ankle. I'm not sure what happened. And in other times, I still don't feel the polish is where it ought to be on national television. I thought they gave them a lot of time to have a match. Overall, I know you talked about the buildup to the Casino Battle Royal being a cluster of spots, some working well, maybe some not. The women's same thing. I had that feeling. How did you feel watching this match? And also, I guess part two to complicate my question, what about the champion beating the challenger? Boy, doesn't that go against the WWE cliche?
There's another spot where I forget what happened exactly, but Nyla did some sort of cannonball-esque dive into one of the corners, and I looked like she broke her neck. There were some spots that that were not very well executed. I agree with you on that it does not look very polished, but, you know, I think it's the best of what they got right now, and it has improved since they first, you know, premiered, so I'm going to give them a great amount of curve there. But, yeah, the Nyla beating Sheeta, I was shocked. It very much felt like I was watching SmackDown, and I was like, oh, is Sheeta going to win? That's the first thing that popped in my head. And then they did the spot to, like, reverse psychology, you know, through the table. And then I was like, well, I guess that even out my wrestling logic brain that anything can happen now. So it was odd. And I think it was just because Britt was out, and Britt was probably supposed to take the pin from Sheeta, is what I'm going to assume, which makes me think that injury is even more legitimate now. I don't know. Maybe they changed on the fly, but it was odd, and there were some pretty rough spots. But, you know, I think you can pinpoint who has the rougher spots out of the people in that match and who doesn't. But, you know, one of them's champion. So.
And then we had Nyla Rose deciding to touch everyone's face, because, as we know, that's what the government and all the experts are recommending, is have somebody come out and touch everybody's face with their finger. Mm-hmm. And then Jim Ross goes to Excalibur. Okay. What is that?
Yeah.
Like contempt. And Excalibur goes, well, that's the alien greeting. And Ross like, oh, okay. Yeah. But he finally asked, we finally, you know, got that explanation. Jim Ross can be happy. From a character development standpoint, I still think they have a ways to go. You know, are we supposed to laugh along with Chris Statlander that she pretends to be an alien to get into people's heads, or does she really think she is? Or are we supposed to believe she's actually an alien? And we're not skeptical, or we're not sure, like, that character development's not there. Mm-hmm. And I would have liked to see a little bit more with it, and I don't know what you do, but to get us more invested in Sheeta wanting to win the title, and what that would mean. And I thought they did a better job the last 2 weeks or last week. The two might be blending together with me, but I just didn't have anything that made me go, oh, yeah, I really – That accelerated my interest or amplified my interest in seeing Sheeta and the reign of Nyla Rose, other than Nyla, you know, being a jerk and a loudmouth. and so in general principle, but I want to be more invested in Sheeta herself. And I felt that was kind of missing from the show too. Craig, back to you.
Can I have two quick follow-ups on the,
yeah.
on the The first one was the angst in the and the showcase and the spotlight part. I think a lot of the women's acts do have that angst, just based on. It's kind of like the Sasha Banks thing. She feels that she has to go above and beyond, and a lot of women feel that way. I mean, I'm guessing. I'm just, you know, based on what I read and hear on, you know, when in interviews and stuff like that. They feel that angst and being in the spotlight forces them to try to do more than the men do. So I kind of, you know, I don't want to say that's you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of a meta storyline, but I don't really think it's an AEW storyline. This AEW doesn't have a history of a divas division, and they don't have a history of you know, women on all fours barking like a dog and being objectified and being hired for Playboy. So AEW's story is these are athletes, and there's no reason to believe they would be any more nervous than Sammy Guevara should be or Jungle Boy should be. So to me, it just kind of came across as I tilted my head a little, going, well, why are these women nervous? Two female matches on a national pay-per-view shouldn't make those people shouldn't be any more nervous than any random two male wrestlers on the pay-per-view. So I don't know if it was a unintentionally outdated comment about, well, God, that's pressure for women to perform on pay-per-view because men are used to the big stage, or if he was getting at something else like what you're saying, but it just didn't fit AEW. Tyler, what do you think he meant by that?
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Wade. I mean, you know, I think 4 weeks ago or so we had Marcus Stunt going against Lance Archer, and yeah. I didn't hear any comments about him being nervous and that sort of stuff. So I think there is a double standard in our society. And I think that the women may feel that internally, and you know, all three of us not being women, it's hard to say, but I don't think Jim Ross saying it helps by any stretch of the imagination. If they are feeling that. And I would have never thought that this match with the four of them, that was even an aspect of it without him saying that. So, you know, I just don't think it's needed.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I don't want to blow it way out of proportion, but it was one of the comments in the match where I was like, okay, there's something Jim Ross said that I don't quite get, and mark it for conversation in case I'm just kind of forgetting something. Go ahead, Craig. I think you said you had another point too.
Yeah. The other one was, Shida, Hikaru Shida. She hasn't spoken. Like, even with subtitles or a translator or anything, she, like, the entire, I don't even know if I've ever heard her voice. And that is a minus for me in the way she's portrayed. And I really wish they would grab on to, you know, even video packages, do something like what they've done with Io Shirai and stuff like that. Or, you know, anybody, just if there's a language barrier, you have the capability to, you know, fix that bridge and do better with her. And I really hope she wins, because she's fun. So,
yep. Anything else for us?
Yes. The last thing, the Jon Moxley has been my favorite wrestler for years. And I was at Double or Nothing last year when he came out of nowhere, and it was like the most amazing thing. We bull rushed the barricades and security just to see it happen when he came out, and it was great. And right now, I don't think there's a match. Like, there might be one or two matches on the card that I want to see less than that match. It's like that match is so buried by the rest of the card, in my opinion. And I'm wondering, there is no way they're going to end the show with that match, is there?
The narrator called it the main event. Tyler, what's your prediction on that?
I mean, I was thinking about this the whole show, because it opened the show, and I agree with Craig that this is one of my least anticipated matches. On this card, if it was not on the card, I would still be buying this pay-per-view. And if this is the only thing going on, I would consider not buying it. But yeah, I don't know. I think if they want to hold, you know, stick to their guns, and the world title is always last no matter what, they're going to do that. I think it's going to hurt the show because I think the Stampede match has been positioned to be the main event with all the top stars. And the build for this world title match has not been great. Obviously, Mox has not been available to build it, which is a not his fault, but it hurts the build of the match itself. And yeah, it seems to me like the TNT title, the with Mike Tyson being there in the Stampede match, both are way more important in my eyes than the world title match, which is a problem that we can get into if we want to.
On this show, though, we heard from Moxley. We heard from Brody Lee. Mm-hmm. We didn't hear from Lance Archer. We didn't hear from Cody. Mm-hmm. We heard from Arn and Jake in, I thought it was a cool segment, but it didn't, it wasn't this crescendo of emotion. It was, two grizzled veterans, kind of having a moment. So to me, I think the hype for Moxley Brody was better going into the pay-per-view than Cody and Archer, because we didn't get that dramatic Cody promo talking about what this means to him. They had time for Sean Spears to do a Sean Spears fake news segment. And we had time for some other things too, that I would have replaced with something. Even if they gave Cody the night off, they could pre-record it last week or something. But I guess I wanted to have a snarling, intimidating Lance Archer vowing what he's going to do to Cody, and Cody give a nice, good, solid, inspirational message about what this means to him. And it just felt like it was just there to be had. I mean, it's not a stretch to think that should happen. And I've been hard on WWE or Roman Reigns or WWE/Roman Reigns for him not having those final inspirational go home promos in all of, pretty much all of his run. I mean, it was rare that you would hear from Roman Reigns right before a pay-per-view. And instead we got surrogates talking. So, we got a lot of talk about Mike Tyson, and what'll happen, but I wanted that hard sell for Cody. So I guess I give a better grade to building up Moxley with a couple promos and Brody Lee at the top of the show than Cody Archer. Tyler, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to – they definitely put way more effort in the, the world title match on the go-home show to sell that. I think they were pretty much resting on their laurels that, we've had this tournament on TV the last 2 months, and we've gotten a lot of good feedback about Lance Archer being a big monster, and, Cody and him will probably have a good match, so we can kind of ease off, I think, is their mindset. And I think that showed in the episode, and I guess I bypassed that too because that's kind of how I felt, and I didn't need any more into it. My problem overall is just the presentation of Brody Lee at this point has been a little off, and I can't even put my finger on why. And then the Moxley character is pretty one note to me, and it's, I just think that the match is not going to be a barn burner by any stretch of the imagination. So, I guess I'm just putting my anticipation onto the match, into the build, and discrediting it because of that, which is not fair. So that's my feedback for you.
I like your now. You end with your, but I'm not being fair.
Yeah.
go ahead, Craig. Any other topic or closing words for me?
Closing word. They have that Friday night go home preview thing at 10 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
After SmackDown, ironically enough.
How convenient.
And
yes.
Yeah. And thanks for taking my call, guys, and everybody go VIP because it's freaking awesome.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much. They would point to the fact that Friday night is their big go-home show, Tyler, but a lot of people aren't going to be watching Friday night compared to who watched tonight. And I was even nervous when they announced that. I was like, I hope they're not saving – because this pay-per-view is important. It's not like, the Khan family are going to go broke if they don't do X number of buys, but it's important to show that – they can maintain some momentum and that they don't just, and they have the excuse to fall back on, which is, we didn't have use of all our talent. The Bucks and Hangman Page especially have been out of the mix for a while, and we're kind of going with maybe some B-level matches in other places, and the perception of the show is that it's not, it's a lesser lineup relative to the other lineups they've presented. So all of that, but my gosh, I mean, that means to me work harder. Not just almost seem like you're, and I wouldn't say the show felt like they were giving up on it, but I felt like if you have a countdown show on Friday, don't give me the feeling that you actually saved some of your best stuff for that to get me excited about the show. And I was a little concerned that they thought, well, whatever we don't cover on Wednesday night, we'll cover it Friday. Because, I mean, you know, Friday night, they don't have 3 to 7 days for people to watch on delay. And a lot of people watch Dynamite on delay. And a lot fewer people are going to watch at an odd time, even with the built-in SmackDown audience carrying over for people who are thinking of it and aware of it. So, yeah, to me, Cody Archer is the main event of the show. It should go on last. It's got Mike Tyson, and I would have had Cody in that ring or backstage or something. I mean, I was looking forward to Jake and Arn, but I need to hear from Cody. Tyler, what did you think of Jake and Arn, by the way?
I thought it was a good example of why sometimes scripting everything ahead of time or having bullet points can be helpful, because it felt definitely a lot on the fly between two guys who are obviously legends on the mic. And, you know, there's a couple times where it just felt awkward, and it felt like, I don't know, like the middle segment was not very good. Like the beginning opening statements for each of them was okay. Arn finished a lot stronger than Jake did. But in the middle where they kept interrupting each other, it just felt kind of petty and didn't help build the match in any way, shape or form. Like it ended with them maybe fighting. It was just kind of confusing in general.
When they socially spaced the whole time, which I'm glad they did, by the way. I want to say good job AEW for, there's two people out there who are older and at risk and not, you know, they're just, it's not worth having them up close interacting with each other. And really, I mean, even just the referees being out there was rough. Although, you know, we're learning, we don't know anything. We don't know a lot for sure, but open air without anyone who's sick, coughing and sneezing directly at you in an open air situation with brief interaction seems to be quite low risk. I mean, that's the latest science, is that it's the amount of time you're exposed to somebody with the virus or massive direct contact, like a sneeze, you know, the droplets. So I don't, like, I'm not sitting here just cringing, oh my God, they're going to kill somebody. I mean, the number of things that would have to happen for it to spread under those circumstances in an open air setting, that briefly with young people who all have been tested and had their temperature taken, it's just not likely. But Arn and Jake, you just, the optics of either of them interacting close with each other, if any of them have it and aren't showing symptoms yet, which happens, was good. Also, separate us from COVID entirely. I'm not sure I want to see Arn and Jake throwing punches for on general principles, both because it probably won't look very good. Sad to say, but it's just, you know, let's be honest. Yeah. And also, you know, somebody could get hurt. You know, WWE ran into that before, you know, and we've seen, you know, with Jerry Lawler and Ricky Steamboat and others, it's just not smart. So I thought the refs were a little late on the run in to separate them. I thought Jake grabbing Tony, I had to replay it and go, what just happened there? And I'm still not sure what happened. So the end was weird. Jake calling Arn, what did he call him? Plump? Or was
thick,
that
thick?
Yeah.
He said, you're getting thick. And I laughed very hard saying it.
I mean, it's not like, you know, Jake is doing DDP yoga the way DDP does DDP yoga, you know, in terms of being svelte and in that level of shape. So that was kind of interesting too. So, I mean, for Ross to say at the beginning, this could be a classic or a car wreck, it was sort of setting us up for the possibility that these two might not be at their best. But I still ultimately thought it was cool. I thought that their personalities were prickly and played well off of each other, representing each of their wrestlers. They seemed sincere in defending their men, the wrestlers they're representing. But, I mean, it was not a B+ or an A- overall. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think from two legends like that, if you didn't know they were legends, you'd watch that and be like, yeah, I'm not quite sure what all the fuss is about. So, but I don't think it was a car wreck. For me, it was cool to see two people that I, you know, grew up watching cut great promos, interact with each other as surrogates for what I consider the main event on the pay-per-view. But it definitely could have been better. And there was that awkward moment where Arn just looked at Jake and said, don't interrupt me. Put his finger on his forehead, like, I'll control myself now. Yeah. But I kind of enjoyed the tension. It's kind of like Jim Ross commentary. There's something about it I enjoy because you just don't know what's going to happen. But I don't think it reached car wreck level as Ross prepped us for the possibility of it.
I agree.
All right. Let's go next to 305. Go to 305. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Sage. Hey, Tom. I said Todd. Sorry, Wade.
I don't care. That's fine. That happens.
Had the fix on my mind, man. Sorry.
No problem, Jim. It's fine.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, Javier from Miami. Starting off really well.
Hi, Javier. Yep. Go ahead. We could string this out, but it doesn't need to be strung.
Yeah, I mean, I'm already turning red. My blood pressure's up. That's all good. good episode. I liked it for the most part. Still hurts to think about dropping that much money on the pay-per-view, but, you know. We'll see if we could get together and if my family could get together and watch it this weekend, hopefully.
Yeah. So I posed a question to Tyler. I mean, you might have your own agenda, but real quick, what match do you think they did the best job elevating your interest in, or maybe step back in the general public's interest in?
Well, I mean, in this episode, probably the women's match. I pretty much stayed on the same level on the same Stampede match. And I mean, the Archer one was the only one that I wouldn't say it made me feel less to watch it, but that whole, Arn and Jake thing did nothing, you know, nothing for me. So, to promote the match. So, going into it, the Archer Cody match is the one I'm most interested in, but it didn't really add any more to it. And I'm really not that interested on the Brody Moxley match. It's just I'm really not feeling the whole, you know, even though he says it's not a parody of Vince McMahon, I'm not feeling the parody of Vince McMahon. And you know, it being like the whole cult thing is just, I don't know, I'm not feeling that whole thing. So, which is, you know, I was also surprised when they said that was going to be the main event. So, okay.
And the main event doesn't have to go on last. I mean, they can say it's the main event because it's a world title, but have a reason or have no reason and end up with, you know, Mike Tyson and Cody and Archer going on last.
And that's my guess. I did have a question on the Mike Tyson thing because since Arn pushed the idea that Mike Tyson is going to get involved on their side, using, you know, wrestling psychology, does that kind of maybe put the idea that maybe he's going to help Archer win?
Yeah, I hope it's not such just ham-fisted, heavy-handed reverse psychology. Like, you know, this is it. He's got him. Oh, no, he kicked out at two, where, you know, WWE had that habit and still does, although it seems a little less consistent than it used to be, but it could be in my imagination or numb to it now. But I hope that's not the case because it felt kind of weird. Like, well, you know, Mike Tyson gets to go wherever he wants. It's like, what do you mean? Like, are we supposed to assume he had restrictions? Like there were, you know, Arn said that like the baseline assumption is Mike Tyson is coming in, but the only thing he's allowed to do is stay in his locker room until the match is over. And then he has to walk dutifully to the ring and hand over the title and then walk dutifully back to his limo. It countered an assumption that nobody had, which is that, you know, Mike wouldn't be able to do what he wants. I think people sort of assume Mike Tyson gets to do what he wants almost anywhere he goes from a just general celebrity standpoint of his stature. So that was, that was kind of weird. I could see Mike, you know, getting involved in the finish in a way that it's a heel move to help Archer win. And that's part of the drama of Cody coming up short. And I mean, there's so many stories they can tell in this match with either Cody winning or Archer winning. Tyler, I mean, what's your call for the finish of the match?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This whole time, it seems to me that Cody just like is supposed to lose these matches with this character that he has. That only heel Cody would be able to, you know, use a Mike Tyson to be the big bad heel. So to me, it seems like some sort of Tyson's getting involved some way, and it affects Cody in some way. I don't know. I try not to think with Cody matches because, you know, it kind of takes the enjoyment for me personally to like fantasy book that. But yeah. I kind of see just Archer beating him with Jake doing something to Brandy, and then Archer gets in, you know, Tyson's face after he gets the belt from him and gets punched or something. I don't know. That's not great to have your champion get knocked out by Mike Tyson as soon as he wins, though. So
yeah.
I don't know. So I hope it's not that streamlined, because then I get disappointed when I can book a finish on a pay-per-view.
Right.
But yeah, something like that. I mean, Tyson's definitely doing something. He's probably punching Archer and knocking him out, which makes me think that Cody's going to win the belt. But we'll see.
Yeah. Javier, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, they have my trust, so I'm hoping for the best in that respect. But I mean, I could see it being inadvertently knock out Cody, or one of those cases, or one of those where they cancel each other out. That maybe he is, you know, Tyson is in cahoots, but then Brandy, in order to, because I'm pretty sure Brandy's going to be involved to get her revenge on Jake. So I think she's going to act as the swinging the cheating to the other side, you know, to shift the momentum of the match. But yeah, I don't know, man. I would expect the worst from the WWE in this situation, but you know, it'd be interesting. And I mean, and if he does turn heel, I would expect that they have him for more than one for this one run. So that would be interesting. If they could get him for multiple bookings, that would be interesting.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. A good coup for AEW. I mean, it's not the late 90s Mike Tyson, but he's back in the news and he's a legend. And AEW, I mean, Arn and Jake are an example of it. I mean, they're trying to grab every demo they can, and Tyson still has cachet. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good get to have him on the show. And I would have liked to have had a phone call from him or something during commentary if they could have swung that. Although you can argue, you know, it'd be better to hear from, just see Mike show up and not hear anything from him, but it would have made it feel more real. Although they put the graphic on the screen in the lower left corner often enough, I think if you watch the show, you definitely know Mike Tyson's on this show, and that is one of the reasons to tune in to see him. And I think it's a good hook for the show that he's on it. I think if we weren't talking about Mike Tyson in that match, it still would be a good match for people to watch Dynamite on a weekly basis. But Tyson adds something. It doesn't distract or take away, and I hope that it's booked in a way that we look at it as doing justice and adding to the match and not just being kind of a superfluous distraction from a celebrity that got in the way of a better story they could have told without him. And we'll see.
And pie in the sky, what if all the video of him, you know, training and getting back into shape isn't for boxing, but to do like a quick run on in AEW? That'd be crazy.
That would be, yeah, really, a big swerve on, God, I think the mainstream media would pick up on that, too, get AEW on the map, and what a way to get at WWE, but to use Mike Tyson again.
Yeah,
and to segue on the WWE, watching that Sean Spears news, that looked like the most WWE like skit AEW's ever done, and the scary thing is that they did it so much better than the WWE, in my opinion.
Well, Tyler, what did you think of Sean Spears and that presentation, and even the content? You know, bring it up. You know, because he said it's a tough pill to swallow, and I'm like, oh God, that's a cliche that would get you kicked out of any journalism school or any school. Like, you know, cliches like that, it's just, they're groan inducing. And then also it's like, oh, I see why he did that. So he could take this real world dig at him having a problem with pills back in the day, a dozen years ago. Did that work for you? And was that a good, because Sean Spears has had some television time, but not a ton, to establish his kind of smarmy heel persona that he's brought with him, or established, I guess I should say, over the summer in AEW.
Yeah. I surprisingly liked it a lot. And I agree with Javier that it was very much a WWE skit, and I was like, could not believe it was happening when it first popped on. And then at the end of it, I thought it was actually pretty good, and I thought he did a great job, and he definitely needed something, because I would say the top two things that he's done in AEW are hit Cody with a chair and then throw money around at ringside during the quarantine shows. And that's basically what I think of with his character. So I think this is a nice segue for him to get his, you know, like you said, his heel persona out. And, it's a, you know, just watching it, you definitely want Dustin to win on Saturday. And that's kind of what Sean Spears is here for, is to be that kind of fringe guy who you can level up against if you're a good guy. And I think that's a great role for him to be in.
Within 2 seconds of him sitting at that desk and with that smarmy smile made me want to see him lose. He didn't have to say anything.
Yeah.
There's just something about his demeanor. I'm ready. I'm ready to see him go down in flames. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Javier, go ahead. Anything else? But in a good way. I don't hate the guy. I'm just saying he plays that role so well. I want to see him get punched in the face more than MJF even.
On what Craig was talking about, Sheeta not doing promos. The only one I remember was in, I think, the last Double or Nothing, where it was a backstage interview and Nakazawa was translating for her, but it was done, you know, in a very New Japan kind of style. So that's but because I looked up to see if there because it did strike me, man, I don't think I have heard her talk. So yeah, I looked it up, and that was the only time I've seen her actually speak with during that interview.
And Javier, I mean, what comes to mind that they could have done to better promote that match?
I mean, the thing about. Because I think part of the reason with that is because since she has the whole samurai gimmick, there's, you know, the part of Bushido is stoicism. So I think that might be what's, you know, because you would think, because she's been around during these tapings or these shows. So I would think they would have had her do something, and, you know, but I don't know. I mean, I think. On this episode, them hitting the nail over the head that been number one for 12 weeks and hadn't had her shot because of the situation. That helped. And I didn't say it last week, but when I don't know if it was like a wink or a kiss that Nyla threw the camera after she, with like this, like, just I don't care smile after she hit her with the kendo stick. I think that did so much because I haven't been a huge Nyla fan. I haven't been a fan of her character because it's like, you know, I'm just the Beast, arg. But with that little bit of personality, plus some of the stuff that I had seen on Being the Elite, that helped establish her. You know, I've become much more of a fan. And that look at the camera, and also good job with them. I think it was Excalibur who said that. Britt Baker was evil, but Nyla Rose was malevolent, and I'm like, oh, that's I love that word. Go for it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
So I think all that worked out, in setting that up. And as far as to finish that match, I get the feeling that because normally you would expect Britt Baker to take the pin in that situation, but with her out, I think the pin was supposed to be broken at that point because and I'm blanking on her name, Alien.
Chris Statlander.
Yeah, Statlander. After she went through the table, you see her mouth, "I'm sorry." So I'm wondering if she didn't break the pin on time, which is why she had to take the pin in that situation, because it felt like an abrupt ending to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I hesitate to be too critical, considering, you know, there likely was an audible that had to be called there at the finish, or read too much into them trying to counter WWE's psychology. I don't want to pat them on the back too much for an innovative approach to that either.
Yeah, I mean, it worked for me though, because for that very reason that oh wow, she got pinned.
Yeah.
So now I'm thinking, because since that never happens, I'm like, oh, so we just saw the champion beat the challenger or pin the challenger. So wow, I mean, that's so is this gonna happen again? Is this just gonna be like a can she learn from it? I don't know. It's just because you never see it. Like my brain is like going in a completely different way.
And that's,
of like
that's
the
what we want from
this.
And that's one of the frustrations, Javier, with WWE's approach to things is it doesn't make your brain operate in different ways. It almost feels like on the 1 year anniversary of each episode, they switch around a few of the wrestlers, but they book the same show with the same quote twists and turns and psychology. And you're never really challenged by what they do. And I think AEW consciously is trying to do that. I mean, I was a little disappointed we had the excuse finish. Kip Sabian providing a distraction on the ladder. And, you know, WWE's just been doing the excuse finishes so much that we're, oh, I'm distracted by somebody, and therefore it doesn't count that I lost. And I feel like, you know, I mean, I get they're trying to protect Orange Cassidy, but I'm not sure that protected him more than it hurt AEW by kind of falling on the same in the same pattern that people have been critical of WWE for doing.
Yeah, and that's one of the things doing the primers particularly the AEW Impact versus the WWE ones. A lot of times when I'm wrong, it seems to be more, you know, in AEW and Impact, it seems, oh, they were going with a different direction of the story, while a lot of times on WWE, it seems like, oh, too many people guessed our finish, so we're going to go a different direction.
Yeah.
You know, because since they don't really establish too much of what's coming next, it almost could be a coin flip whoever ends up winning a feud. Because, I mean, you know, like Seth Rollins lost his feud with KO, yet he was the first challenger minus Big Show, nor Big Show, the first challenger. But he came out on the losing end of the KO feud, yet he's in, you know, I don't know if you had the injury, but he seems at a higher level than KO. So it's just weird when you have that on one side and then, you know, like logical booking, I hate to say.
Yeah.
You know, you say that's logical booking in AEW. So.
Tyler, anything you want to add to that?
No, I think I'm good.
Good, cool. Javier, any closing subject from you or final comment?
No, I mean just the I'm all in on the pack promo. That was spooky. That was cool. that's, you know, I'm all in on pack. So.
I still think it's weird. We got, you know, segment with pack and didn't get to hear from Cody. You know, or I don't know. But yeah, it's good to have him back in the mix. And I have no idea if they can. I haven't researched if they can get him there Saturday to be in that match. The Casino Battle Royal or what, but the idea that next week the Casino Battle Royal chip gets cashed in against Moxley is intriguing. Doesn't leave any room for, I guess it leaves room for Moxley to lose to Brody Lee. We could have two different champions by next week at this time. There could be two more AEW champions in the record books. I think that's highly unlikely, but that possibility exists based on the way the booking is laid out. Anyway, Javier, thank you. Appreciate it. Always good to hear from you.
Thank you very much, and hopefully I'll have the primer up by tomorrow, so or over
cool,
to you
yeah.
by tomorrow.
Look forward to it very much. But and by the way, on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast Thursday edition, it's normally our flagship, but we moved our flagship to Tuesday this week to accommodate a Dynamite inclusive official full fledged preview of AEW Double or Nothing. Greg Parks from Wrestling Night in America scheduled to join me as co-host. We may have another special guest, and so stay tuned for that possibility also. That's over on the Blue Logo Show on Thursday, so look for that Thursday afternoon or evening, depending on when it gets produced and posted, and then I'll be back Friday night right here on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show with Mike Myers from PWTorch.com analyzing SmackDown. All right, back to the phone lines we go. We'll go to 312 next. Go ahead, 312, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade Keller, it's Eric Kroll from Chicago, Illinois. How are you?
Hey, good, Eric. What a surprise. he emailed. He gave me the heads up. Eric, great to hear from you. Good to talk to you again. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Wade Keller. Hey, so I want
Eric Kroll. Eric Kroll, just to introduce some people to know, he was a Pro Wrestling Torch columnist in the 1870s, was it, Eric?
Yeah, 1970s. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I think I was the first columnist back when Madden and Mitchell were also columnists. Yeah.
Hey, that, you know what? If you were the worst of Madden and Mitchell, you could still be great. So I don't. That is not saying anything. Madden and Mitchell were and are great, great, great writers.
Definitely.
With very different voices, by the way. Very different voices.
Hey, so I probably want to beat a dead horse at this point, but I feel like a little bit like it's like complaining about the angle of the nose on the Mona Lisa, because I love AEW so much.
Yeah.
Really like tonight's show, but that women's match was just, what would Stone Cold say, the drizzling shits?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Three out of those four women aren't ready for a prime time in the ring. Britt Baker's a great personality, but what, she had about 100, 150 matches. The booking was off. If you were doing it New Japan style, you would have had maybe Baker and Statlander involved in the finish, right, and kept Rose and Shida out of it. If you were doing it WWE style, or even just logical style, the face challenger does not lose to the champion heel a few days before the pay-per-view. I just thought it cut Shida's off at the knees. They've been doing a really good job during the pandemic of building her up, talking about her win streak and won 7 out of 8, 8 out of 9, whatever it is. And now her momentum is just kind of stalled. And then the post-match angle just added to the illogic, I guess. The face is putting the heel champion through a table, making the heel champion look weak. And if it was the opposite, if Shida had pinned Rose and then Rose had put her through a table, that makes perfect sense. It makes the face look strong, like maybe she's got a chance to take the belt on Saturday when you're actually paying money for all of this. And the heel, the face also wants to get revenge on the heel for putting her through a table. And so I know there's a, you know, I would guess we'll find out more tomorrow about whether Britt Baker was actually injured. The fact that Britt was in a spot with her knee at an angle that shouldn't have been, leg at an angle that shouldn't have been, or that they threw Rose on Britt. Either way, it doesn't make sense, right? Why even do that spot? So I like the show, but I'm picking on the thing I didn't like, which I guess was the nature of podcast and live stream.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Are you allotting for the possibility that everything just got unraveled because Brett was legit injured?
Yeah, but when you've got to make – so let's play that out. So
yeah.
Britt's supposed to be involved in the match. Obviously, she was supposed to be involved in the match in some other way that she didn't get to. Presumably, she was injured. I don't get why you would work an injury in that situation.
Right. Yeah.
Does not apparently make sense in when you're live. So what happens then? So Aubrey has Tony Khan in her ear, presumably, and they got to make up a new finish on the fly, and then a post-match angle. They went the opposite way of what you would expect. And the thing I like about AEW is that most of the time the booking is fairly logical and it's not stupid and it's not 50-50 and stars actually get over. And, you know, I guess give them a mulligan, but it was just it just stood out because it was so jarring and nonsensical on a show that usually makes – perfect sense, and you can see where they're going. And even if they still have surprises from time to time.
Yeah, yeah. Tyler, your take on what Eric added to the conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that most people in the ring are pretty green. We can all agree on that. And you know, like Wade, you're saying with calmness, having different voices. You know, writers have different voices. You know, I think the booking of the women's division in AEW is still trying to find its voice because they've definitely switched how they're trying to do it from October to now. And yeah, they don't have a strong booking style like New Japan does or WWE does. So, you know, I think we are watching the kinks being worked out as we, you know, live every week on Wednesday. So I think that's got to be bore into it. And then, you know, I don't want to get like in the weeds on this, but you know, if there was a change in the finish, maybe there's a little bit of a language barrier with Aubrey and Shida to switch on the fly.
Oh yeah.
And she took a pin, you know, cause she, you know, she thought maybe, you know, anything could happen. And then she was like, oh, I still have to get the spot in the finish. Cause maybe she thought she had to. There's just like a lot of things that if it was a real injury and it's just like everyone kind of freaking out because it's live and not being in that situation a lot of times before. If Britt was not injured and that was the finish, I agree. Didn't make any sense. And it's just a bad job on the booking to put the talent in a bad spot. So, you know, we don't know what it is, but that's kind of my feel on the situation.
Eric, let me ask you what I've asked others, which is what match do you think they did the best job elevating your interest in and the general audience's interest in?
Well, I was already interested in what I assume will be the main event, the Stadium Stampede match, the tag match where they were in the carts a couple weeks ago was, you know, just great. I loved it. I don't think I've ever watched DDT really. So to me, it was new, innovative, interesting, and I was curious to see how the stadium would play into things. And man, that is a large football stadium. I'm just super curious, where are they going to be? Are it's 5-on-5? Are a couple of guys going to be in one part of the football stadium, guys in another part? How's it all going to work? The world title match is a bit, I'm just not super into Brody Lee.
Yeah.
I feel like they pushed him to the top too soon, and he has to lose, right? They're not going to cut Moxley's legs off like that, I wouldn't think, especially during, you know, the you don't have any audience, you don't have a crowd, can't these days. So to put Brody Lee over, too soon. And then since they do generally do clean booking, Brody Lee jobs to Moxley, and he's kind of done as a top heel. Or, I don't know, maybe he moves to challenge for the TV title. I don't know, just... With that, I don't want to call it a weak world title match, but it's not as strong as, say, Jericho Moxley or Jericho Cody. Definitely seems to be the weakest world title match they've had since Jericho and Hangman Page, who wasn't over then, hugely over now. The Stadium Stampede makes up for that, and it's all anyone will be talking about probably when the show ends, if they pull it off right, and they've given us no reason to think that they won't be able to pull it off.
I think they got some challenges booking wise, and I think there's a chance they pull it off. You know, I mean, we'll see Saturday, and we'll evaluate, judge what they do and if it worked. But they might have a perfectly logical and satisfying escape for where Jon Moxley gains from a solid win, but they give Brody Lee something significant coming out of that match to do, whether it's Saturday night or something that happens Wednesday to kind of rejuvenate him. And, you know, you got to have, I mean, it happens for real in UFC. It happens for real in team sports. You got somebody's got to win and somebody's got to lose. And AEW has been really good about having winners and losers and not DQ and countouts or double DQs. And I'm curious, cause it's so early in Brody Lee's run, what they have in mind for him. Is it 10? Is disappointed that Brody Lee sacrificed him and 10 actually cost Brody the match, and that's sort of a sidebar feud and then they eventually get Brody heated up again against a higher up babyface, but they do a little TV feud with 10 because 10 is upset with being abandoned. That seems a little soon to have one of your followers turn on you, but he sure abandoned him after knighting him. You know, there's different things they can do, and that's just, you know, one of a handful of possibilities you could probably just spitball right now on how they could have him lose but have his attention focus elsewhere pretty quick. I don't think Brody should stay a top three heel. I think he can be a 4, 5, or 6 heel in your company and every once in a while visit the main event. And so maybe the best time to get something out of him is on a show where you have Mike Tyson and Cody and Archer with Jake and Arn, and you have all these moving pieces and all this buildup. That's when you can get away with a lesser main event. Plus, it's empty arena. And so they might want to go with a B match instead of an A match that otherwise might be happening this weekend. So I will see what they do Saturday, but I'm open-minded to looking back at it and saying, okay, I see why they did what they did and it made sense. And it doesn't make what you're saying, Eric, untrue, or what others are saying too, Tyler, too, that this isn't a red hot world title match. I think Tony Khan and company might go, duh, we know that, you know, we were not aiming for this to be our WrestleMania Jon Moxley match. We've got Cody, Archer, and Mike Tyson, and the Stadium Stampede. We're good. That's what we feel we need, and we just want to get through this and hope we can have a crowd by the next pay-per-view later this summer.
How would you guys book Cody, the finish for Cody versus Archer? Who do you think should go over?
I mean, you can. I think you can go either way and make it work. A lot of it depends on the Cody story arc. You know, is a story arc Cody keeps coming up short as a babyface, and he attributes it to things that then causes him to change his approach and go heel, renege on his commitment. And or do they just want Archer mega, mega strong because they just are really impressed and believe in him? Or do you tell a story where something goes wrong on the Archer side of things and Cody wins and he's a co-babyface champion having a hot run opposite of Moxley having a hot run, because you eventually want to build up to sort of a WrestleMania-type match between them, even if one of them doesn't have the belt by then, but have them as sort of, you know, Savage Hogan on parallel paths, not crossing each other for a long time, or a Sting Luger situation, but hopefully on a higher level in WCW, where you sort of had these two up-and-coming, or I don't know, they're both in their 30s, but, you know, two strong baby faces and on top. So I don't, I mean, I could honestly come up with five or six other rationales for each guy winning and losing. And I don't have a real strong feeling for it because we're so early in the booking of Lance Archer. We're so early in, heck, Tony Khan and company's booking, that I don't really have a full-fledged sense of their tendencies yet. Tyler, how about you?
Yeah. I first of all, I agree with you, and I think that's a great place to be. It's the antithesis of WWE, where you kind of just feel like you know everything that's going to happen. So that is something I'm thankful for. But I think Archer winning gives you a lot more possibilities, like you said, with you know, this long-term story of Cody eventually just losing and losing and losing, have to change his ways and do that great heel persona. And you know, it's sitting right there, and it could be a great multi-year story told with his character. But, you know, I think Archer winning keeps his character strong, which is important for the company to have a big, strong heel that is a formidable opponent to upgrade to the main event. And, you know, that's where I see it going. But, you know, Cody winning as well, giving prestige to a new title, also makes a lot of sense. And, you know, have him basically treat that like his world title is also a great story to tell. So they've booked themselves in a good position on that. So I'm happy to see where it goes. And then if I can also add one thing on the on the you know, Brody Lee and Moxley thing. I think Brody Lee, this is as hot as he's ever going to be in the company, coming in from WWE. You know, it seems like a coup to get a new guy in there. So I think putting him in the spot makes the most sense right now, as he's most likely to be the most popular now. And then I think depending on who wins, you know, whoever the mystery opponent is, I think has the best shot to win that ladder match. You know, I think Moxley losing to that person that wins the ladder match is a possibility. I don't think him losing to Brody Lee is a possibility, but I think if the match is universally not well received and they could pivot from Moxley being champion for the time being, I don't see that being the craziest thing in the world.
Eric, back to you. Any other topics you want to bring up?
No, I think Tyler's right about Archer going over being the more intriguing of the two possibilities, but I don't recall a match where I legitimately have no idea which way the booking is going to go, that it could go either way. I worry that Cody cools off even further as a babyface with the can't win the big one reputation, though that would be an intriguing storyline. But two babyface champions, I don't know, is that the way you want to go? Maybe you don't. I'm just, out of all the matches, that's the one I really looking forward to, and just in terms of, you know, scratching the itch of how the hell they're going to book this and which way is it going to go.
Yeah, very good. Eric, thank you. Good to hear from you. Appreciate you calling.
You too, Wade. Talk to you.
Yeah, great. You bet. All right. Let's answer some emails. If anybody else wants to jump on the phone lines, you certainly can. 347-215-8558. Just push 1 on your keypad if you want to be on the show. Let's though go to some emails here, and we'll begin with Kevin from North Carolina. He says, I've been on the fence about buying the upcoming Double or Nothing pay-per-view. Tonight's show helped my son and I decide to get it Saturday. By no means has AEW been perfect in its presentation, but I have more faith in their storytelling than WWE at this point. I really enjoyed Sean Spears' SSN segment tonight. Hangman sprinting a very long way to make it to the brawl. And I like that he will help the Elite, but wants his individuality. Everyone go VIP. I got my stimulus check, and I'm planning on doing a year subscription now. Well worth the money. Thank you, Kevin. That is a very good use of the stimulus check, giving it back to a small business to then be put back into the economy. So thank you for that. You'll get a year of enjoyment out of it. I appreciate the plug. And you're setting a good example for America. All right. Enough on that. PWTorch.com/GoVIP, by the way, if you want to get more info or sign up. That's PWTorch.com/GoVIP. /GoVIP. I mentioned it before. Our ad rates plummeted. They have across the industry. You can tell watching TV, it's a lot of ads for a lot of weird things where they only make money on commission or whatever. It's, you know, the fill-in ads. And that's certainly the case in the ad market right now on the web and podcast. So we are a business that would love to have your support through a membership, and we'll give you a lot in return for that monthly subscription fee. So if you've thought about it before and you haven't been hit too hard by this situation, might be a good time to check it out, because we're doing a ton of great stuff on the VIP side of things you're missing out on. All right. Yeah, so Sean Spears, Tyler, what is Sean Spears' upside? I mean, I think they've got him slotted correct right now. I was worried they were going to overpush him, and I thought Tully and Sean against Cody last summer was good. But I've always thought, even in NXT, I just thought he had a ceiling to him. And I think they sort of get it. And I think he's, like, really valuable in the role that he's in right now, which is a last-second addition to a pay-per-view after being a jerk who you want to see get beat up by a mid or upper mid-level babyface.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he's in a good spot. Sean Spears, to me, is kind of like, I don't know, like your – favorite uncle who you see occasionally at family gatherings, and like, you know, he's kind of surly and maybe not the most pleasant person, but he's kind of a good time too, you know. He's just he's there, but you don't see him all the time, and that's like perfect. Like he always seems to be in the background of these shows, and he always does something to make it entertaining. And yeah, I just think he's you know, I can't think of a WWE equivalent for him, but he's like the Brooklyn Brawler, you know, on steroids, where he's actually in matches on pay-per-views and things like that. But he's just like a lovable character that, you know, he doesn't ever need to really win or do anything. He really is there to help everybody else, and I think that's okay. I think that's a good use of him.
Yep, and yes, the Hangman Page 50-yard, 100-yard sprint will go down in infamy, and I'm sure it'll be referenced on Being the Elite for years to come.
Yeah, hopefully they got his 40 time somehow in there. They can do that.
Yes. All right, Zach in Texas. Wade and Tyler, I must commend Tony Khan for the job he's done building a pay-per-view in 3 weeks under the circumstances, as we call it. I'd like to say the build has been better than Money in the Bank, and it's not really close. They're exposing all of WWE's creative flaws. I'm excited for the Stadium Stampede match. It's already going to be so much better than that. It's a mad world-style race through Titan Tower. We were subjected to a couple of weeks ago. At least the Stadium Stampede will resemble a wrestling match. I'm ready for Double or Nothing. It's amazing how far AEW has come in a year's time. Tyler, anything you want to add to that? More just commentary on his part than a question, but
yeah, a great reference for the mad world. Love that. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely a very making lemonade out of lemons sort of pay-per-view, and just seeing the two companies just in general, what they're doing, you know, with the live show, having wrestlers and the, you know, just making some crowd noise has been just so much easier to watch those shows than WWE shows. So, you know, they are, if you were to do a 10-part documentary about this era of professional wrestling, I think that AEW will be viewed as the victor creatively when you look back at this.
Yep. All right. Up next, Bruce Lee, PhD of Seattle. Good evening, Wade and Tyler. Watching Jon Moxley tonight against 10 or Press 10 Vance, as listed on their webpage. I really liked how he's added some rougher edges to his character heading into his match. The Gotch pile driver is nasty, and the fact he hasn't used the elevated paradigm shift in months only adds to the seriousness of his pursuit to regain physical possession of his championship. What are your thoughts on these rougher edges of Moxley? And by the way, I thought Brody Lee was good tonight. What are your thoughts on who emerges as champion at the end of Double or Nothing? Please stay safe, everyone, and go VIP. You'll get to hear Tyler and Ryan interview the seemingly the entire Ring of Honor roster. 2020 is over. Tyler, actually, let that be a gateway into you talking about your VIP podcast. I just mentioned VIP membership a few minutes ago. For people who are Ring of Honor fans, want to learn more about the promotion or just here for some wrestlers, tell them about what you guys are doing.
Yeah, so when we started, Ryan and I were breaking down, you know, very typical podcast, breaking down matches that were coming up or matches that had happened, angles in the company and all the behind the stage news and all that sort of stuff. And obviously with the coronavirus and the quarantine, ROH is not running shows. They're still not running shows, and they are still paying their employees, which is great. Just want to get that out there. But we've been talking to... Yeah, like Bruce said, a lot of people in the company, from past world champions like Matt Taven to, you know, Bobby Cruz, the ring announcer. We episode dropping tomorrow. We were talking to Todd Sinclair, their head referee, who used to be a booker with Excalibur at the time. So it's a great interview. I really suggest people go and listen to that. Todd's a great guy and had some great stories, funny stories from in the ring, and just some behind the scenes stuff that you wouldn't really think of when you talk to a wrestling ref. So that's kind of where we transition now, is it really just, you know, ROH kind of feels like a small company. I know they're owned by a larger company, but, you know, you just get a feel for people that work there. And just like here, right? I mean, they listen to, you know, people listen to you 5 times a week, probably, right, Wade, if they're VIP. And, you know, when you get to know someone who owns a small business, you just want to help support them. So that's kind of how I've been with ROH. I've had my problems with them in the past creatively and decisions and stuff, but, you know, just getting to know people has been great for me. So hopefully it's been great for the listeners out there to, you know, get to know Ryan and I, and we're just two guys talking wrestling, and, you know, we focus on ROH, but, you know, we're just kind of two guys talking wrestling. So give us a try. And even if you don't like ROH, I promise that you will enjoy something about the show.
Cool. Excellent. So, Moxley, the edge, the difference between Moxley, even Ross mentioned it, like, well, Moxley's got to feel great headlining a pay-per-view as champion, considering where he's been the last few years and the road he's been on. I liked Moxley tonight. I thought the first segment, I wanted to see a little more, a little extra oomph with Moxley's intensity about wanting the belt back. But I also get that Moxley, as he said, doesn't want to be a geek, running around backstage frantically looking for a belt that is his, even if Brody is holding it. And so I think Moxley's got a handle on who he is and who his character is going to be. And it's going to be a guy who's intense and what he says he means, and you take him seriously, but he's not going to yell and scream like a maniac all that often. You know, there might be an occasion where he turns it up to 10, but you know, with Brody Lee's kind of methodical, deliberate delivery, and then Moxley not really caring about the belt, it didn't seem all that much in the opening segment. I was left wanting a little more. And then sure enough, they gave it to us later on. And I thought Moxley was cool. And I think he's the kind of guy that, you know, Todd Martin was talking about on The Fix earlier this month. Wrestlers need to have a cool factor. Wrestling needs to have top stars who have a cool factor. And Vince McMahon just hasn't had luck with that. And he hasn't had the Midas touch with whatever influence he's had on it. I know the idea was Roman was going to be really cool compared to John Cena, and it just didn't click. You know, it didn't, where he was almost too cool for school for so many people. Moxley, I think, has that mix. You know, fans know he loves wrestling. As he told me when I interviewed him last summer, he would just go work Combat Zone Wrestling for $50 a night instead of sign whatever that multi-million-dollar contract offer was in the envelope he didn't look at when he left WWE. He just wanted to be a wrestler. He just wanted to do his thing. He didn't want to be compromised by the corporation and the man. And I think he's staying true to himself in AEW and I still think he's finding his footing. I think there's a range he can be in. And he's making choices every week on how to present himself. And we're going to see more of those choices made as he fully finds his voice with the freedom that he has. But I thought this week, especially the totality of what he did in both segments, worked for me.
Yeah, it worked for me too, more than it has the past couple weeks. Now, at the top of the show, I did say that I think his character is pretty one note at the moment, which I obviously, that's what I said. So that's what I think. But I think there's ways for him to evolve. I guess my concern is just, if I were to do a 6-month outlook on him, I'm concerned is where at what his character is 6 months from now. And like you said, the interview you had with him, that was, I mean, was it a week after he was out of the company? It felt very soon after that. And that guy doing that, what was like a 2.5-hour interview with you, was the guy that I wanted to, you know, I want that guy in the ring, obviously without all the swearing on national TV. But, you know, like just like Craig called earlier, I was in the section that he walked down. Like, you know, I heard clicking at Double or Nothing last year, the clicking of the things. And I was not the world's biggest Dean Ambrose fan. And I saw that guy there in that energy of that crowd, him doing that. I just haven't felt that from him. And it's hard with no crowd.
That's the thing, yeah.
Yeah, but it's just something, like, it almost feels to me like he has to have a chip on his shoulder that obviously he's champion now, so it's hard to do that. Like, he almost has to be screwed out of this belt with some convoluted story, and he's got to, like, be attacking the system from within or something to get that full character of like, he needs to be essentially like systemically has to be like smushed down by higher ups, by Tony Khan, by Cody, by the Bucks, by Kenny, by someone in power has to like give him something to make him seem smaller. And he has to, you know, somehow they have to tie that in storyline because his real life persona is that guy and it works really well. It's just this stuff that he's doing where he's like a cage fighter who's, you know, it's fine for now, but I see it being, it needs to evolve and I'm unsure if it can in its current iteration.
Yep. Yep. All right. Let's jump to, we'll do Piper here from Singapore. Hoping you're all safe. I like that even the AEW doctor was wearing his mask, but why can't the people at ringside do the same? And I'm not sure I can approve of Chris Statlander booping all those ringsiders on their noses either. What do you think is the next for Dark Order, assuming Mr. Brody Lee loses to Moxley at Double or Nothing? I'm surprised and find it strange that after everything that happened at Revolution, it seems the tag division has ground to a halt. Nobody's even challenging for the tag team championships. The division has lost momentum. How can they recover after Double or Nothing? And how important do you think Double or Nothing is to today's empty arena wrestling landscape? Thanks for all you do. Stay safe, and everybody go VIP. Thanks, Piper. A buffet of choices there to comment on. Tyler, anything jump out to you?
Yeah, I actually did want to bring up the tag team division in general, so that's a great point that it definitely has felt like, you know, it hasn't been much of a division lately, and I think a lot of that is due to not knowing if, you know, your tag team champions are going to be available to defend their belts, and you don't want to have, you know, side stories going on when your tag team champions are not present as a unit, so that's a really tough spot to be in, but it's just been hard with, you know, a lot of the teams have had one or two people of their tag team, but not their whole tag team. So I think that's the main reason why it's ground to a halt. So, you know, we can look past that in hindsight, but they definitely, if the women's division has improved, the tag team division has declined in its stead at the same graph would, you know, be inversed on that. So that is there. But, and then the stuff with, you know, the booping and stuff, you know, that's not great, but they're all tested. And like you said earlier, or in the middle of the show, you know, it's about, you know, if they're going to run shows, which is a whole nother conversation in general, you know, this is probably the safest way to do it. And I don't know if I'm touching someone's face there, it's not ideal, but, you know, also wrestling somebody's not ideal either. So I still have more kind of issue with the commentators who are, you know, 62 and 68 and Excalibur, you know, being right next to each other. That's more concerning to me on a weekly basis, but.
Yeah. I mean, if she washed her hands and came out and touched everybody's face and then, I mean, the risk isn't great. It's more just the sort of symbolism of it at a time when, you know, she's within, you know, 2 or 3 feet of, you know, 6, 7, 8 people in a row who are wearing masks and then she's not, and they're not, and she boops all their faces. It's just sort of like, there's sort of a ridiculousness of it when you consider if you're going to do one thing and then you do that, it's just the visual of it. I think, but you're right. I mean, it's a lower risk situation with brief contact or brief being in the vicinity of somebody while not sneezing or coughing briefly. If you have been tested, you've had your temperature taken and you washed your hands and they've been wearing masks and they've also been tested. That is not as high of a risk situation as when I walk my dog every day and there's 27 kids at the skateboard park coming from households full of who knows whom, who knows how many people, and then going back to those households. It's just like, you know, the stuff going on in real life is way higher risk than a bunch of people who've been tested and are self-aware to some level, inconsistently, but a higher level than the average, you know, kid at skateboard park these days.
Yeah. But it is an inconsequential thing for her to be doing. It doesn't help her character, as we've discussed lots of times. It doesn't really make any sense. So if you could, if it's a finisher, that's one thing. But if it's something before a match that I didn't even notice until someone brought it up, then it should probably be avoided. It would be my stance in general. But
yeah, and I think Jim Ross's tone matches a lot of viewers. They're just like, what's going on here? And can we get to something that'll draw money? And that isn't some sort of cute indie gimmick that should not be carried over to national television. And I mean, that's how I feel about the totality of this. So all right, JB in Detroit, what do you think the countdown to DON on Friday will look like? Will it have the same feel and production value as the previous countdown shows? I would say yes. I think it'll have a similar feel. I think it'll feel like a Sean Mooney event center with a mix of Carneyland. How's that for Very old reference and a very current reference.
Yeah. I do think that you're right. I didn't think of this until you said it, but I do think they're going to really push. They'll probably have a Cody sit down interview to really push that match. And they probably should have put that on this week's show, which, you know, I think AEW has been doing what, low or high 600,000 people watching it live. And then a couple hundred thousand more watching it later.
Yeah.
At 10 o'clock on a Friday is probably going to do, you know, I'm not looking at cable numbers then, but maybe 200,000 people if they're lucky.
Yeah, I think it'll be 200 and change given that it follows SmackDown. I think that actually helps them quite a bit.
Yeah, but you know, just to triple your audience on Wednesday, that it just, yeah, I didn't think of it, but it is a lost opportunity for them to really push that match. But
yeah, and in fairness to AEW, a couple weeks recently they've done 700 plus live, and they're in the high sixes, and you know. So, but, you know, they gain a couple hundred thousand people by the 7 day out, and they're not going to have that time with a turnaround with Double or Nothing with this. Mm-hmm. So they kind of need the live viewership or the next day viewership to put, because I know a lot of people are making an issue with the price and that, you know, it's just too much in these times and a lot of people are out of work and hurting. And I get that. And I hear that. And so I think the countdown show is important. In fact, getting back to JB, he said, will it look like what MMA and boxing have been doing for years, particularly with the involvement of Mike Tyson at this pay-per-view, or will it have its own spin on things? Will it be able to carry the wrestling audience that was watching SmackDown over to TNT as it's immediately following? And overall, do you think these countdown shows, if done well, can actually move buys on an AEW pay-per-view for those who may be on the fence for purchasing a crowdless show? As always, thank you for the content. And for those only listening to the free shows, come on, go VIP. 4 exclamation marks. Come on. Mm-hmm. He typed 4 exclamation marks. He means it. He says the insight is worth its weight in gold. Thank you, JB. Always, as always, appreciate the plugs, the endorsements. Yeah, the crawler show is an issue and the economy is an issue. And I do think the countdown show takes on even more importance for a show that I sense a lot of people are on the fence about. And I think there will be a significant number of people who are like, I watch SmackDown or not, but I want to watch this countdown show. I want to get, I want to see what they're doing. And I like AEW and they'll probably do some cool things. And that will be that'll be the deciding factor for me. I mean, I'm that way with UFC sometimes. So I think that this is one of the more important countdown shows for that reason.
Yeah. And, you know, it depends on how many, you know, if you're talking, if you can get, I don't know, 5 to 10,000 more buys, that's a huge amount of people you could swing on an hour of television. So, yep. You know, I have no idea if that number is even plausible for last second buys on a show like that, but yeah, it'd be very important. And yeah, it's if you're not watching the TV and this needs to be basically a hour long infomercial on why to buy something, you know, it's got to be good, and they've been good at it in the past, and you know, see how it is. But it doesn't work for me, but that doesn't mean it doesn't work for other people to decide to buy something or not. So
yep. All right, we have Joe who says, wait, I've been a huge supporter of AEW from the start and definitely willing to give all wrestling companies a big pass given the reality of empty arena wrestling during the pandemic. With that said, it feels like AEW has pivoted hard over the last 2 months from all the hot new acts that made them relevant to heavy main event emphasis on Matt Hardy and Brody Lee. With all due respect to both, they were barely featured on WWE television, and I think their AEW runs are making that seem like potentially a good call. I think both have been a major negative to AEW's momentum, but I'm curious for your perspective. We have not talked about Matt Hardy and Sammy Guevara. Tyler, talk about the quality of that match. It did strike me watching this that, wow, AEW's headlining with Matt Hardy against Sammy Guevara on a go-home show live with, you know, access to a lot more wrestlers. I don't think they should be putting their top acts on television in main events every week. I think that was actually a negative, just having Kenny Omega just, you know, a Kenny match just being there for him to do spots and do his thing and out of context, because it's all about giving the fans a bunch of action. And now that there aren't crowds there, I do think that definitely changes their strategy. And I don't think we should read too much into this strategy compared to what we'll eventually see when they have crowds again, because I think there'll be different factors that play into a product that I think ends up looking different than this does. And it might be different than what it did last time they had crowds. I mean, it's an evolving product and an evolving vision. That said, what did you think of Matt Hardy and Sammy Guevara as worthy of that main event spot, even though they put them there in part, and WWE does it sometimes too, where you're like, that doesn't feel like a main event, but there's something after it with a big star or a bigger star where you go, oh, I kind of see why they did it that way. They ended on a note, because they weren't going to end on, you know, Matt Hardy and Sammy as their final pitch for the pay-per-view. I mean, how did that work for you?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I saw that that was the main event when they did the rundown at the beginning of the show, I thought they would do maybe Moxley and 10 with some Brody Lee stuff would be the main event just because it's the world title. But as soon as I saw that, I just, you know, I watched a lot of wrestling. So I knew that it would lead into the Stampede stuff and get us, you know, fired up for the last, to have that be the last shot of maybe the Bucks jumping off the, you know, off the entrance ramp or something like that. You know, I didn't know it'd be in the stadium, but, you know, I was surprised that the match finished. I mean, that just is their mentality. You finish matches if they're booked. But, you know, when Hardy pinned Sammy, I looked at my phone. It was 9:55 Eastern time.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow, they're only going to do 4 minutes of selling the Stampede match. I just thought it was I thought it would finish at like, you know, 52 or on the hour or something like that. So I knew it was coming, so I was fine with it. And, you know, I think Sammy especially, man, that dude is a selling machine. I just want to get that in there. Taking those twists of fate and looking like he's literally going to break his neck every time it gets me. So I want to shout out Sammy on that. But it's good for a guy like that, you know, him, MJF, Jungle Boy. I think AEW does a good job not pushing younger people too much, but making sure that they're in the periphery and they're like talked about, hey, these people are young. These people are going to be around for a long time. We're going to treat them accordingly. Like they may not win all the time. I just think they're treating that aspect pretty well as a company. While still, you know, leaning on Jericho's and Matt Hardy's and things like that. Now, in-ring quality, I mean, Matt has not been an in-ring talent, you know, top 10 in-ring talent for a long time. But, you know, I think
Did he keep up with Sammy tonight, did you think? Or did you think he didn't have a good showing?
I think it was fine. I think it was very much a Matt Hardy match, and I go into it knowing that. I think him being used in golf cart stuff and being in the ice chest and all, that's his character to me. Him having you know, ultimate deletion matches and all that stuff is kind of what he should be used for. He should be like a younger Undertaker where they do cinematic stuff with him more often than not when they can, and that's fine with me. I knew that going into it, that he's not Jeff. I mean, that's always been the thing, is he's the brain and the talker, and Jeff was the worker of the two. If they could merge, they'd be the greatest, you know, professional wrestler of all time. So that's fine with me. And then the Brody stuff, you know, they were trying to get to this point, so that's why he's been so focal the last couple of weeks on TV, and I think he'll go away from being a main part of the show. So that'll fix itself up. But, you know, that's how I feel overall with those two guys coming in. I don't think they've been negative as the emailer has felt, but that's how he feels. So.
We'll close with Javier, who just sent a couple notes in regarding Sammy. He said, if wrestling doesn't work for Sammy, he has a future in horror movies. His facials and screams when Matt crushed his head against the ring post were great. He also says, Darby says much more not speaking and communicates better through his mannerisms and symbolism in these promos. I love them more, please. I mean, Darby, and I think they just let Darby just do those. But Darby has a sense of how to be different, and he hasn't sold out yet. You know, like, I mean, he's just in every step of the way, he establishes himself by pushing back against any authority, whether any sense of, maybe I'm misusing the word authority, establishment is a better term. Anything that's establishment, babyface or heel, any tradition, he is just unabashedly his own guy, and he's going to communicate in his own way. And I think it serves him well. There's shortcuts. You know, he could be yelling on the microphone and aligning with big stars. And, you know, I mean, I love what Sammy Guevara and Kip Sabian are doing, but Darby's doing something completely different as, you know, the young undersized guy who's trying to stand out. He's doing so in a way that really, really stands out. So I agree with Javier, his facial expressions through subtlety. It's not Sammy Guevara facial expressions. It really does communicate.
Yeah, and those vignettes that he does are really great, and it's a skill to be, you know. I think he's talked a couple times, you know, mainly when he first got signed, he was talking about the tragic stuff in his life early on, but you know, he doesn't really talk a lot, and you know, we were talking about with Shida, hasn't talked at all except for Double or Nothing last year. You know, there's a way to build and present a character where they don't talk very much and it can work. You know, Orange Cassidy hasn't talked, I don't think, ever on screen. I could be wrong on that, but so there's different ways to go about it. And, you know, Darby's a really creative guy. And again, just like I was saying with younger performers, he's super young and they're treating him well, but also, you know, not making him the, you know, the golden goose. So I like what they're doing with all their younger guys and letting them kind of do their own thing. It's sink or swim, and most of them are swimming. And I'm just really excited for the future. You know, you don't get that with other companies that, you know, you kind of feel like, okay, well, this is what we're going to have for the next couple of years. And AEW feels like it'll switch when it needs to. Right now, this is working with the guys at the top, and they could switch in 2 years and be a whole different company for the better. So that's exciting.
Javier added, JR said the ring will be at the 50-yard line during the brawl at the end. I don't know if that means there will be a legit ring or if he was using poetic license. So just thought I'd add that. I don't know what they're going to do with this brawl. I don't know if they're going to have one camera trying to follow everybody or they're going to be in different places, of the, you know, in the stadium, some in the bleachers. And I mean, it might flop. I mean, it might not work. I haven't seen a match with that much space to work with that many wrestlers and have them pull it off. And I'm still not sure if they're going to pre-record it or go live. I don't think they've really given an inclination either way for sure where they're locked in.
Yeah. I mean, if they go live, that is adventurous. I think that is a pre-taped match all day because then you could do things over and make it not as chaotic as it could be. But we'll see what they do. I mean, there's a pool in the stands. I know there's definitely going to be someone probably that's going to be dropped in the pool if there's water in it right now. Who knows if there is, but, we'll see. And then it's false count anywhere, right? Did I hear that? Okay,
yep.
So it'd be odd if it ended in the ring, if the whole stadium, you could pin somebody and they finish in the ring. So we'll see. Maybe they'll start in the ring and then find it and then, you know, work its way outside the ring and end somewhere else. But we'll see.
Let's see. Oh, we didn't bring up the MJF performance against Marco, and you mentioned Orange Cassidy. And what did you think of what they did with Orange and Rey Fénix? So just kind of comment on that to round out our show here.
Yeah. So they're kind of protecting Orange with the, you know, kind of goofy finish and more for the ladder match, getting everyone involved there. But
and it was the most we saw Orange Cassidy do his wrestling style in a way that upset some traditionalists. And I thought he pulled it off. Like, I didn't think it came across as we're just going into another universe with this style, and it's just for fun. It's Chikara or something. Like, it felt like he was kind of pulling off something that was kind of messing with Rey Fénix's timing and ability to really deal with things. And I don't think they took it too far. I thought it was a good evolution of Orange Cassidy on national television.
Yeah, and obviously he had the pay-per-view match with Pac, and then I think he's had some dark matches solo, but that was definitely, yeah, if you only watch the TV product, that was probably the first time you've seen that side of Orange Cassidy, which helps to sell him in a match like the ladder match. But and then getting Ray some singles time. I mean, obviously he's one of the most talented in-ring performers in the world. So seeing him get some singles time and get the win, I thought was great. And then the post-match stuff was fine. I mean, I thought it was good. I think Orange Cassidy is going to be an interesting question down the line because he's a really good in-ring performer. Obviously Tony Khan loves him, dressing up like him and doing photos with him all the time. It seems like he might be some, you know, his Undertaker almost, with how much Vince loves Undertaker. It might be Tony Khan's Orange Cassidy, so we'll see how that goes. But, I think you had another question in there that I totally forgot, so I apologize.
Oh, just MJF and Marco Stunt, that went.
Yep. I mean, I think that I said earlier, that was the build that, because I didn't care much about, not care, but, you know, MJF beating Cody at the last pay-per-view, and then him to have a match with Jungle Boy, to me was sort of parallel or lower booking for MJF, which I was concerned about. But then this with Marco, it's kind of sold the match. And I think they're just doing that slow build of MJF basically being undefeated, as they mentioned, and being the biggest heel in the company to set him up for a big main event spot down the line. So, you know, I thought it was good. I thought, you know, Marco did his stuff and MJF and Wardlow are doing exactly what they need to do. So I said, that was a really solid, old school wrestling segment to get the heel over even more so.
Cool. Tyler, thank you so much. Great conversation. Appreciate you joining me as co-host today.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and thanks to everybody for listening. And
any social media you want to give people they want to follow?
Sure. Yeah. I'm at Ring of Tyler on Twitter, and we are at Podcast of Honor on Twitter as well. So that's where you will see my musings on the world of wrestling, and I will be tweeting about Double or Nothing this weekend. So if you're interested, give me a follow there, and we can chat while it's happening.
Excellent. Thanks so much, and thanks to our callers and our emailers also for helping us out on the program. You can follow me on social media, by the way, and on Twitter at The Wade Keller, and you can follow our brand at PW Torch.